Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Cafe Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every Monday to Friday from 11 to noon. Check us out on restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
Dynamite.
Dynamite.
Yeah, dynamite.
Dynamite could be a different strategy for one of the problems facing some of the towns in our area. We have a columnist here, Fran Wood, who writes some pretty good columns for the Star-Ledger, and then she writes this ridiculous
one. And then some less so.
All right, I just don't get it, okay? We need to come together and realize that we're going to be intelligent. We need to think about where our food comes from. Now, there are people out there who are vegetarians, and they're vegetarians because they believe that we should not kill animals for food. Now, there are a lot of really good, defensible arguments for that position.
Well, they believe we should not kill animals, period.
Right. There are.
I mean, not all vegetarians feel that way, but there's a faction of vegetarians.
There are many, many cogent, defensible arguments to say we should not kill animals for food. But just so you know, lots of people always think, well, Buddhists say you can't kill animals for food. Some Buddhists say you can't. Some Buddhists say you can. The Dalai Lama is not a vegetarian. The Dalai Lama says it's better to kill one cow and feed the whole village than to kill millions
of... 24 shrimp.
Or millions of grains of corn, you know? So, what it's about is respect for where the food comes from, knowledge about where the food comes from. And if you're not a vegetarian, okay, I think there's also defensible arguments that we need to kill animals humanely. There are arguments that say, well, keeping a chicken in a cage where it never can turn around, where it goes crazy and has to be debeaked because it's totally a natural way to keep a chicken. Yeah, an animal is not a meat machine, okay? It has another, you know, we need to respect the animals as well. Also, good arguments. But people who say, well, I'm not a vegetarian, but oh, my God, how dare you kill the chickens? I don't want to see you kill a chicken.
I only want chicken breast.
Okay.
Leave the legs and thighs on it.
Here's the article in the Star-Ledger from Fran Wood. Going too far to get rid of geese. If you were asked for a list of ways to eliminate pesky Canada geese from a public park, would decapitation ever occur to you as an option? Sure. That's my answer. A hunt with a gun.
In cartoons, in little kid cartoons, you see a guy with an axe killing the or going after the turkey.
Do you know
Thanksgiving dinner?
Okay, when you kill a chicken on a farm, how do you kill a chicken on a farm? You cut its head off.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? Because that's a very humane way to kill a chicken. Okay.
Because the chicken doesn't know you're going to cut its head off.
And by the time it figures it out, it's much too late. While I was shot, have you ever heard running around like a chicken with its head cut off? That comes from farms where they would cut off the chicken's head or snap its neck. That's a quick and humane way to kill a chicken. Okay, so if Fran Wood writes, I was shocked to learn that that's precisely the method that Harding Township employed in July to rid its public recreation area, Bain Park, of 14 geese. And what crime did these geese commit? Are you stupid? They didn't commit a crime. They're not geese. They're not human.
Their crime
now,
is they are geese.
The Fran Wood continues, now, goose droppings are unpleasant. I readily grant you that. I'm just not sure they merit the death penalty.
I want to know what she's eaten on Christmas Eve.
Stop confusing animals with humans, okay? And if you want to say, I'm a vegetarian, I don't believe that we should kill animals, okay, 98% of America will disagree with you and you'll be relegated to your own place. But there are defensible arguments to make there. But to say, I believe in eating meat, but we shouldn't kill it this way, we shouldn't kill it that way.
No, I believe there are certain ways you should kill it and certain ways you shouldn't kill it. You shouldn't kill it over a 2-hour period. You should kill it as quickly and humanely as you possibly can. But what's more humane than letting a geese live out its natural life, or geese live out their natural life, and then killing it, and then eating it? You know what I think is ridiculous? All these towns that kill these geese and then don't use them for food.
You know,
that I think is ridiculous.
What's funny, Mark and I believe that they should decapitate the geese and then serve them to the local restaurants.
To the soup kitchen or to a restaurant, wherever.
Or sell them to raise money for the town, and let's have some goose for Christmas, okay? All right, didn't you see, what am I thinking of? Ebenezer Scrooge.
Scrooge.
What's the name of it?
A Christmas Carol.
My God, I'm so illiterate sometimes. The township's Wildlife Management Committee had also explored hiring Goose Police, a firm that uses border collies to drive geese away, but at $9,680 for a 9-week patrol, they decided against it.
Or you can get $30 for your goose.
I was going to say, 18 geese, $30 a goose? Come on. And then donate it to the animal shelter where you can spay the cats. For God's sake, let's be reasonable here. Let's see, the unsurprisingly, let's see, what do we have here? No. There were folding screens put up to contain the geese who were lured to the enclosure with bait. The birds are defenseless at this time of the year because they're molting and cannot fly. What, like they have a gun other times of the year? It's a goose, and we should go there with rifles and shoot them.
Because they would peck at you if they weren't molting.
Okay, I've never heard of decapitation as a mean of exterminating Canada geese, says Barbara Dyer of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Office of the Humane Society of the U.S. based in Flanders. We believe we can solve the problem without killing, but it requires patience. Okay, geese are not threatened, okay? Geese are food. Kill them, and not only kill them, eat them, okay? And make pillows from their feathers, okay? And make a down jacket and wear it.
You know, we look at, and Francis, you hear Francis and I talk all the time about, you know what, we're overfishing this particular area. Let's stop fishing in this particular area. Okay, let's set up quotas on the number of cod that can be caught in the Atlantic so that the fisheries don't collapse.
You hear us say don't be cruel to animals that we keep in confined animal feeding operations, that hogs and chickens are really treated poorly. But these are geese that are flying in the wild. They have a normal life. And you know what happens if you don't decapitate the goose? The goose does not move to Florida and retire in a condominium and die in its sleep surrounded by its relatives. Something else eats the goose.
Right. Or what happens to the deer? They starve to death because of overcrowding. You know, people are so afraid of taking deer to reduce the population. Well, if you take the deer and you feed people with it, well, I mean,
and
you're accomplishing something. People are going to eat a certain amount of meat. If they decide to eat deer meat because you've culled the deer population and they eat fewer cows, why is that bad? If you do the same thing with geese and we eat fewer chickens, why is that bad? Well, I don't understand.
Well, and here's the thing with the deer. People say, oh, you can't kill deer to cull the deer population. What humans have done is we've removed, the reason there are so many deer is we've removed the natural predator of deer.
Right, we've removed the mountain lion, so thereby there are no deer. There's nothing to kill the deer.
What we've done is we've stopped killing deer. Mm-hmm. What man has done to screw this up is there aren't enough deer being killed. You get it, Humane Society people? So the cougar isn't around in Lawrenceville to kill the deer anymore.
You know, cougar is just another name for mountain lion.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah, actually.
I didn't, look at you. With that, we're gonna have to look that up on the internet afterwards. Anyway, so here, the Sarasota, Florida company Bird Busters, that's at www.birdbusters.com, agrees that geese removal is an area of expertise. He says, "Is this a joke? Decapitation would be as cruel as it gets." Who have you been talking to?
Okay, you know what's cruel? A chicken in a cage that you cut its beak off and it spends its entire life unable to turn around.
Which is how
that's cruel.
Which is how Tyson chickens are.
You know what's not cruel? A geese that can fly around its whole life and then you kill it later on.
And then you eat it.
And you eat it. Not cruel.
It's like Thanksgiving. You know what? It's the basis of Thanksgiving. It's the basis of a national holiday. Okay, Fran Wood, get a clue. Well, you can email her at fwood@starledger.com. Tell her the restaurant.
Or you can call her at 1-800-GET-A-CLUE.
Tell the restaurant guys sent you. You're listening to the restaurant guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1150. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the restaurant guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Cafe Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Linda Felice is a writer and shepherdess. She's owner of a country store, and she's dedicated to supporting, like we are, local farmers and locally grown food. She and her husband Larry faced a nightmare in dealing with the USDA. Basically, the same feds who are unwilling to deal with mad cow infections or any sort of meaningful regulation over the big corporate agribusiness farms are more than happy to scapegoat the tiny Felice family farm, and Linda's written a book about it. She recounts the story of false claims, harassment, and government stupidity, and the way our government fights against small family farms but can't seem to muster the wherewithal to even regulate the corporate giants. Her book is Mad Sheep, and it will make you mad.
Linda, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Mark, and thanks, Francis, for having me on.
Well, your story, I tell you, I made me crazy, okay?
The government's probably not used to people documenting their things as closely as you did and then publishing books against
will
them.
Will you tell us, and by the way, if you want to pick up this book, and it's a very well-regarded book, it's critically acclaimed, everything that is in there has been, you can verify online, is true, and you can find out how to get that book by going to our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Linda, will you tell us what happened to you and your family farm under the USDA?
My husband and I were living over in England, studying mad cow disease, of all things. And we had the idea that we wanted to come back to the United States with our three young children and set up a true farm, a true family farm. So we knew we wanted to do something in agriculture, something that would be financially viable and something that would involve the entire family. And right before we were leaving England, Larry came across the British Sheep Dairy newsletter. And he said,
it's a great publication. We read it ourselves. No, we don't.
I'm like, Francis, I never heard of that. What
the
are you talking
about? The comics on Sunday are amazing. Anyway, go ahead.
He said, we're going to milk sheep. And I said, we're going to milk what? He said, we're going to milk sheep. And, of course, being of Italian descent, this was right up his alley. But at the time, I didn't realize that you could even milk sheep. And we discovered that in
only the females.
What's that?
Only
the
females.
Yeah. Only the ewes.
Right.
Right.
And in 1992, 40 million pounds of sheep's milk cheese was imported into the United States. Today, more than double that amount comes in every year. For some reason, our ancestors never brought over meat and wool breeds. For some reason, our ancestors never brought over dairy sheep. They only brought over meat and wool breeds. So the first thing we did was contact USDA and say, okay, we want to bring in the genetics. How do we go about it?
So well, that's a good idea. You want to get permission. You want to do things the right way.
So what we're saying is we the sheep that we had in the United States were good for wool, were good for meat, but we didn't have the ones for dairy to make sheep milk cheese, which America didn't have an appetite for a long time ago, but now we do. So we're importing the sheep milk cheese. So you guys come up with a good business plan. Why don't we just bring in the sheep that we can make sheep's milk cheese here in the United States effectively? Sounds like a good plan. You go for USD approval, you get it. You start your farm, you bring in the genetic material, you bring in the embryos from Europe, they're approved, they go through quarantine, and you have got your farm up and running. Is that right?
We actually brought over live animals.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
USDA fast-forwarded our business plan and said we could bring live animals over. So we brought over lambs from Belgium and the Netherlands. So an average American sheep will give you about 80 pounds of milk in a lactation or in a year. The animals we brought over, their parents, their mothers and grandmothers, had produced an average of 1,000 pounds of milk, with some going up over 2,500 pounds.
Wow.
Well, that's because you were giving them all kinds of hormones and stuff to produce extra milk, right?
No hormones. They're all coming from mostly organic farms.
Okay.
So.
Sorry, I couldn't.
All natural.
I couldn't resist.
So your farm, you get your farm up and running. It's a viable business concern at this point.
Yep, and our three children were very integral. Our son, Francis, does all the pasture management. Our daughter, Heather, milks the sheep twice a day from May to October. And our youngest daughter, Jackie, started learning to make cheese when she was 9.
So where did you run into trouble with the USDA? What was the problem they had with you?
2 years after the animals were brought over, USDA showed up at our farm, and they were to give us what's called scrapie certification. So there's a disease of sheep called scrapie, which is related to mad cow disease, but it's been around for 200 years. It's endemic in the United States. There has not been a connection between people eating scrapie-infected sheep and any human disease.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to do just a little bit of science here for just a second. Now, scrapie is this disease that affects sheep, but
has never been transmitted to human beings, and is similar to what mad cow is, except mad cow has been transmitted from cows to humans.
Theoretically.
Yes. Okay.
Yep. So USDA shows up, and what do they say?
USDA shows up, and instead of giving us our scrapie certification, they said, well, we're actually concerned that your animals could be susceptible to mad cow disease, could have eaten contaminated feed while they were lambs over in Europe, and we want to kill them.
Now, on what did they base this idea that they could have eaten contaminated feed?
It was all theoretical possibilities, because we had the feed records from all the animals showing that there was no way they could have eaten meat and bone meal, which is their USDA's theory of how the disease is transmitted, food contaminated feed. So we had records showing these are all grass-based flocks. Sheep eat a lot less grain than cows do.
When we come back, we're going to talk more with Linda Falaise about how this visit turned into the USDA basically seizing the produce of her family farm, seizing all the livestock and killing them for no reason at all on this little family farm when they're unwilling to do that for the big cattle farms that could actually pose a danger to you and me. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Floors, walls, and lighting. The Restaurant Guys learned long ago that the key to making a space look great are floors, walls, and lighting. There's no tougher test to a carpet than a busy restaurant. From design to installation to cleaning, the Gillespie Group has handled the Restaurant Guys restaurant floors for more than 10 years. Designers know what looks great on the first day. Bob Gillespie knows what will continue to look great year after year. Gillespie doesn't just install carpets. Their quality clean division has experience and expertise to keep that carpet looking great. In our business, it's the details that matter. In your home or office, the details make a lasting impression. The Gillespie Group handles projects from large hotels to offices right down to your living room. Look down. Go on, look down. Right there by your feet. You see. You need the Gillespie Group. Call them at 732-254-5508 or visit them at thegillespiegroup.com. Tell them the Restaurant Guys sent you and get a free cleaning with any installation. Remember, it's Gillespie for carpet and flooring, 732-254-5508.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, of Stage Left in Castle Lombardi Restaurant. Our guest is Linda Falaise, and we're talking about what happened to her and her sheep farm. The book is Mad Sheep, and it will make you mad. Linda, we were talking about how you were running your family farm. USDA shows up and says, hey, we're concerned that your sheep many years ago may have had contaminated feed and may have mad cow disease, and you pretty much could prove that that wasn't possible. What happens from there?
We ended up in a huge battle with USDA. They put us under a formal quarantine. They threatened us that if you tell anybody about this, you go to the media or you get greedy, we're going to put you out of business, and don't think we haven't done it before.
So not only are they coming down on you with bad science, but they're saying
they're threatening you.
You can't talk about it, which is the way this particular government seems to be working these days, which I have a problem with.
They love to use fear. Fear is a weapon. And now, so they were using fear on us, and fear they ended up using on the general public.
Now, remember, most people believe that mad cow originated from cows eating cow byproduct, actually eating cow, sheep eating cow byproduct, actually eating cow, in effect becoming a cannibal, which I still don't know why we think that's a good idea. But were there records of your sheep eating cow ruminants, or were the records saying that your sheep had not had them?
It said that they had not eaten that at all. There was no meat and bone meal in any of the feed that we gave the animals.
Have you ever figured out why they, despite the facts, still wanted to destroy your stocks? Is it they just wanted to do something and be seen to be doing something?
Well, according to USDA, they said that they were under political pressure from the pharmaceutical and the beef industries. So the very industries that they're supposed to be regulating, they're the ones that are controlling USDA, and that's what USDA said was their reason for going after us.
But why did they want to target your farm?
We had the only sheep that were directly imported from Europe. And so first USDA went after all the cows that had been imported, tried to get the cattlemen to surrender their animals. Then they went after all the sheep.
Were they successful in getting the cattlemen to surrender all of their animals?
No, thank heavens. Still today, there's farmers that have cows from Europe. The animals are under quarantine, but the farmers have held out.
You know, this is just such an in-depth story of a large government organization going awry with a corporate bureaucracy. And you know, when that happens, the large corporate agribusiness firms can fight it and win, and the small family farm is just crushed by an incompetent government bureaucracy. We're going to talk more about how that happened to Linda Falaise and her family farm and the war on the family farm after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Kaplan Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every Monday through Friday from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is Linda Falaise. Her family farm was put under scrutiny by the USDA. Her book is called Mad Sheep. The government actually seized Linda's sheep and destroyed all the genetic stock, undoing years and years of work. Linda, the reason we talked about before the news that the USDA came and they were concerned about mad cow disease being in your sheep because they had come from Europe. Why would they not listen to the science, the very valid science that you presented that showed that there was really no risk of that?
Because unfortunately, USDA is not involved in science. It's based in politics, and their actions are based in politics. No longer does USDA take care of food safety for consumers. They take care of the corporate agriculture. And we, unfortunately, were the result of losing our farm was a result of USDA's actions.
Well, one of the things that you brought up in your book is USDA has this kind of mixed role, and the role is not only to govern the agriculture department, but it is also to ensure its health. By its health, I mean to make sure its financial well-being. So sometimes those two things are at odds.
Exactly.
Well, and where it's always at odds is that, you know, if you look at USDA, the guy who's the head of the USDA, you know, today is the head lobbyist for the Cattlemen's Association tomorrow, you know, and that's sort of a revolving door problem with the Department of Agriculture and the USDA. They're organizations that are captive of the industry they're supposed to be regulating. But in that mix, the small family farm has no voice at all. So why don't you tell us what happened to your farm, what they eventually wound up doing?
We went to court to stop USDA from seizing our animals. And USDA said in court, the farmers have no rights. They have no rights to question the USDA, no right to be heard before court, and no right for independent testing. And that's exactly true. The way that the laws are written, USDA has extremely broad powers. We ended up getting a hearing expedited in Second Circuit Court. 17 days before our court hearing, USDA showed up at our farm in the middle of a snowstorm. They had 27 armed federal agents in flak jackets, 13 USDA officials, and they cleared out our entire barn of all 125 sheep, not only sheep that we had from Belgium and the Netherlands, but sheep we had brought from New Zealand, so sheep that were not even implicated by USDA's reasoning. So here we have three young teenagers. I had a very angry, upset 16-year-old son, and I'm just scared to death. Like, please, Francis, don't say the wrong thing, because we're surrounded by armed federal agents.
Right. In order to stop them, you would have needed to restart up the militia.
Right.
Exactly.
Think about this, everybody. USDA, which can't get off its hands when it comes to huge meat recalls.
Didn't really mean hands.
Yeah, right. But when it can't get out of its own way, when you're talking about mad cow disease that goes into the food chain that we know is in when cows test positive, that tries to keep it all under the rug when it comes to corporate agribusiness and can't seem to, you know, we're mired in the minutia to actually do anything that might cost a huge corporation money, they need to fire their guns and feel like men sometimes, and so they send out a squadron of
of armed agents in flak jackets. Were the sheep armed or no? I'm just curious when they were attacked.
No. We live in an area of Vermont. Nobody even locks their house or their car.
So they sent the agents in flak jackets so they could feel like they were doing something, and they closed down a family farm. USDA and Department of Agriculture are skewed toward corporate agribusiness farms, but here we have them actually basically taking your family farm away.
For a disease that doesn't exist in sheep.
What I was just about to say is, and here's the point where, Linda, I would be on the other side of this argument so fast if I felt like, you know what, this is a big problem, and we need to make sure that the government is taking the appropriate steps to make sure this doesn't get into our food supply. I would be on the other side of this argument. But the science says that this disease is in cows. Okay, the disease that affects human beings is in cows, not in sheep, and we are doing nothing about the cattle industry, and we've just decided to attack this small family farm because it's easy pickings, even though the science says that there's nothing wrong here.
And we also have a culture of government that says the government can come and say, okay, we're going to do this to you, and you can't tell anybody what the government's going to do to you. That sounds to me like the Soviet Union, not the United States of America.
Right, and I totally agree with you, because we watched what happened over in Britain and saw the devastation of the farming industry because of how the government handled BSE. And so I think of all people, we were especially sensitive. So when USDA approached us, we said, all right, well, let's set up a testing program if you're concerned. And eventually we even offered, take all the original imports, kill them and test them. If they're all negative, let us keep the sheep.
Mm-hmm.
USDA said absolutely no.
Well, you don't want facts to get in the way of their ability to wear their flak jackets. They don't get to, you know, those Department of Agriculture guys don't get to wear flak jackets very often, you know. Now, how would things have been different if you had cattle on your property?
I think they would have stayed away from us. I really do.
Why?
I think that cattle would have been a safeguard, because USDA does not want to know how much mad cow disease is in this country. Every country in the world that has looked for mad cow disease has found it. It's been at a very low level compared to Britain, which had an actual epidemic of it. But every country has found it. And USDA wants to take, like an ostrich, put their head in the sand and just ignore the fact that it's actually here. And they're not taking care of consumers. They're not testing cows for mad cow disease.
For pennies a pound, we could test every cow in the United States for mad cow, and we would probably find some, but you know what? That would keep it out of our food supply.
Right.
Well,
and most farmers, most cattle ranchers are in support of testing.
It's against the law for a cattle rancher, and that's the other thing. We had John Stauber on the show to talk about.
Author of Mad Cow USA.
And one of the things that he said is, you know, and brought to light, is it is actually against the law to test for mad cow. If you're a private farmer and what you want to do is go out and say, you know what, I'm going to charge you $5 extra a pound, and you're going to have 100% sure that your beef is mad cow free. We're going to test every single cow.
Illegal.
That's against the law.
Right. And that's why you got to go to your local farmer. You got to support whoever is raising your food. Go there, look him in the eye, see how he's raising his animals, how's he growing his vegetables. That's where true food safety is. It's not coming from USDA. It's coming from the small farms.
Let's talk about what happened to your farm after the government seized basically the source of your livelihood.
All the sheep tested negative, which we did not know at the time that USDA had all the test results. When USDA received all negative test results, they turned around and they put our farm under a 5-year quarantine. So for 5 years, we could not have any cows, goats, or sheep on our property.
Even though they seized it, even though they knew there was no disease there for sure.
Even though they tested the cows, the sheep's brains after killing them. And
what?
They
why
knew that for 100% sure that there was no disease there.
Why do you think they did that?
To be vindictive. It was like the very first warning they gave us. They said, if you go, you know, if you tell anybody about this, we're going to put you out of business. And this is what they were trying to do, was put our farm out of business totally.
And when they seized your sheep, were you compensated at all for the sheep?
Nope, they waited 18 months, and they determined what they considered was fair market value. Anyone that voluntarily surrendered their sheep got paid between $6,000 and $10,000 USDA per animal. USDA sent us a check for $1,300 per animal. And when we said, well, why the discrepancy? they said, well, you chose to fight.
So you chose to fight, and so the market value of your sheep is less? Crazy. I mean, you know, it's funny. You need to pick up this book just to see how government operates when it operates in the dark, when it can come and tell you that, shh, we're going to do this to you, and you can't even talk to anybody about it. Thank God Linda Falaise did talk about it and wrote a book about it, and you can find out about it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com.
My favorite quote from anybody was what John Stauber, who wrote Mad Cow USA, wrote about the book. It said, mad sheep will enrage you. The sheep are dead, lives destroyed. Mad cow disease is here, and the worst is that these bunglers are still running the show.
Yeah, absolutely crazy. We're going to come back in just a moment and talk some more with Linda Falaise about her book, Mad Sheep. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Our guest today is Linda Falaise, and her book is Mad Sheep. You're going to find that and buy that on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. It's the story of how the USDA very unjustifiably took her farm and put her out of business. And one of the things that's most galling about this is the imbeciles that went after at USDA, who went after this farm, even though it wasn't a vector of disease, because Linda had the audacity to think she was an American citizen and had a right to question her government. They weren't happy with just doing the dumb thing and not protecting the public and seizing her safe, healthy sheep and destroying them. Because she had the audacity to speak up, they purposefully put her out of business. You want to talk to us about what the effect was on you, your family farm after the USDA, in spite of evidence that, you know, your farm posed no threat, but you spoke up. So, you know, some little teeny bureaucrat decided he had to, you know, make up for it by hurting your family. How badly did they hurt your family?
It came close to totally shutting down the farm because we ended up having to buy in milk because of the 5-year quarantine, not being able to have any milking animals on the farm. And to make matters even worse, the Vermont Department of Health, under the guidance of USDA, had put a warning on their website when we still had the animals, telling people to avoid cheese made on our farm. So avoid cheese from three shepherds. So even though there's absolutely no evidence of transmission of the disease through the milk of animals, USDA was not going after any European cheese. All of a sudden, this warning is up on the website telling people to avoid our cheese. When our animals were killed, it took us 2 years and finally threatening to sue the head of the Department of Health to get them to finally take the warning down off the website.
Well,
what we did was our family put our energy into the store. We had formed this a store that we sell local and organic food.
And you got a lot of support from the community?
Amazing support from the community. And I was trying to... I had really bad depression after the animals were taken because this was such a shock to me. Before all this started, I was one of these people that thought, oh, we're the government. We're here to help you. And I honestly believed that. Honestly believed that when USDA had experts, that they really were experts, that they knew what they were talking about. And this was a very rude awakening for me. And one of the positives to come out of losing all of our income, all of our assets, was it made our 3 children eligible for every financial scholarship out there. And so our daughters are at Middlebury on full scholarships, Middlebury College.
That's a pretty nice college.
What were the experts, quote-unquote experts, from the USDA like? What kind of knowledge did they have? What kind of things did they say?
without sounding arrogant, we had more knowledge on mad cow disease than they did. And USDA had one particular person that was responsible for keeping BSE, or mad cow disease, out of this country. And there is the whole problem right there. There's no way that, you know, one person could do that.
So why do you decide to write the book? What makes you decide to get up and say, you know, I've had enough, I'm going to write a book?
First of all, I started writing it to heal, and then what came out through the court documents, and I discovered all this corruption, then I became angry. And I thought, the world has to know what USDA is doing, how it's destroying small family farms, all while they're helping corporate agriculture. Farmers have been pushed around long enough by USDA, and I want other farmers to read it. I want consumers to read it and to say, we've had enough. It's time for a change.
Have there been any negative ramifications to the people at USDA who willfully ignored the science, who hid evidence, who went to put these people who are supposed to be in charge of promoting American agriculture, who went to put you out of business because you had the audacity to stand up to their petty little ignorant bureaucracy? Anything negative happened to anybody at USDA?
No. What happened was every single person directly involved received a promotion. And the main woman who came after us received an award for heroism in her dealing with us.
Well, do you want to tell us who her name or?
Dr. Linda Detweiler.
So Dr. Linda Detweiler sending guys in armed with flak jackets to collect sheep that weren't sick while letting corporate agribusiness run wild. She got a medal. Isn't that super? Sorry, I'm a little cynical on the show now. Me and my high horse are in the studio. It's a little crowded. Now, what's the reaction to the book been? It's quite written about all over the place. What have you heard since the book has been published?
It's been amazing reviews. It's taking off even faster than we expected. The publisher thinks it's going to be their biggest book ever. They're sending me on a national book tour all across the country, out to Seattle and San Francisco, down to Austin, Texas, and
We're going to connect with you. You're going to connect with our producer, and we're going to put where you're going to be on this book tour. We're going to put that up on our website. We're going to put a link where you can find that out on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. I have one final question for you before we have to end the interview. You think you'll ever do sheep farming again?
We called USDA 2 weeks ago and said, how do we import sheep from Europe?
Linda Felice, you get the restaurant. We're going to send you the first ever Restaurant Guys medal for a farmer for bravery. Because you deserve it. And this book tells it like it is. And it's a really inspiring book. And it's very well written. It's an unbelievable story. So you're a hero in our book, Linda Felice.
Thanks, Linda.
Thanks, Mark and Francis.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Mark Francis, stage left in the party restaurant. You know, the USDA is such a corrupt organization.
Wow.
Not just...
That's a big statement.
Yeah. No, it is. And it's not just under this administration. It's been for a long time. There's this revolving door between, like, the top lobbyist for the corporate agribusiness becomes the head of USDA, and it's sending us
really,
down the wrong road.
There really is two different messages two responsibilities that should be held by two different offices.
One is to promote agriculture overall, and the other is to regulate. But that's not the only problem. They're owned by corporate agribusiness.
Mm-hmm.
So they promote corporate agribusiness at the expense of the family farm. And every family farm, that's the amazing thing. In years of doing this show, every family farmer we talk to says, yeah, USDA, they're not helping us at all.
Well, I think the other thing that they say is, yeah, all these subsidies. Any family farmer I know is like, please get rid of the subsidies. All they do is they promote agribusiness and they give them an unfair advantage over the small family
farm. A lot of people, we have subsidies for the family farm. No, you don't. Mm-hmm. In Europe, they subsidize the family farm. They subsidize the farmer. In America, we subsidize crops, and specific crops. And those crops ain't carrots and apples, okay? the four major crops, you know, and they're cash crops. They're the soybean, mm-hmm. corn. You know, it's not about your family vegetables. Mm-hmm. And these hurt farmers throughout the world. And they hurt American farmers. But here you have, as much as we talk about it, here you have a gross example of the USDA gone wild.
Overstepping their bounds.
And a bunch of little toadies there you know, going against, you know, being upset at that this woman would have the audacity as an American to speak out to protect her farm.
And again, I said this earlier in the show. If there was a real threat from this woman's sheep farm, the very first thing you would have heard from Francis and me was, listen, I'm sorry, ma'am. The USDA has to come and seize your sheep, and they have
but
to get them out of the food
supply.
But
here's where I disagree. Even if there was a real threat, if there was a real threat, government operates in the open.
Mm-hmm.
How dare you say, don't you dare talk to the press. Don't you dare talk to anybody about that. That's not America.
Well, they're afraid of panic, of people finding out the truth.
They're afraid of the truth, and we can't be afraid of the truth.
We cannot be afraid of the truth.
All right, I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to a little bit of the truth from the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.